Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome and everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast at Burnt Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burntorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends where you found it, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at LonghornPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, LonghornRepublicPod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who almost had a perfect sports weekend, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
It was a relatively good week. Is there any almost outside of UT for me? I'm trying to rack my brain on the Ravens. Momentarily sounded like they were going to get Cooper Kupp. That was an almost. I don't know. It was very good on the 40. There was some closes, some really good, some almost, but still pretty good. So, right, like there's nothing devastating, but all in all, pretty good weekend.
Pretty solid weekend overall. I mean, I was hoping that Texas would become just the third school to have both the men and the women claim the conference tournament championships, but that's okay. So we're here to talk about that, actually. We're going to talk quite a bit about basketball today. Both the men and the ladies had a strong showing in the conference tournament. The men closed it out and cut down the nets. The ladies lost in the finale. Both saw their names called as part of the NCAA tournament field. Baseball trying to build some momentum heading in to conference play. Softball saw its winning streak snapped, but came away with a couple of big wins in the weekend series. Tennis starting to get things moving in the right direction. Swimming setting up for a championship run. And obviously we'll close the show out with some burnt orange lenses, bang the drum, and all that fun stuff in between. But we start with the number five team in the land in the final AP poll. The Texas Longhorn men finished off the Big 12 tournament, snagging a number two seed in the Midwest region, finishing the regular season with their highest ranking in school history. I guess tied for their highest ranking in school history. For their trouble, Marcus Carr and Rodney Terry both racked up several awards / nomination. Marcus Carr is for the Lute Olson Player of the Year Award. Rodney Terry, on top of being the Big 12 Coach of the Year, has already been named the Sporting News Coach of the Year and is one of the finalists for the Naismith, the Phelan, and the Ben Job Coach of the Year as well. Texas did it. Got it done. Even though we know that the conference tournaments really don't matter all that much going into seeding, Texas got it done with a 20-point decisive win over Kansas. I think it's like, what, three of the last five over Kansas? Something crazy like that? Five of the last seven.
That's right. This is becoming a capital T thing, and I couldn't love it more.
Who doesn't love it? 76-56 over Kansas, outscoring them by 14 in the second half to get it done. Dylan Dessou led Texas with 18.6 boards. Marcus Carr did his thing, 17. Serge Ibari-Rice got it done with 17. I think the big thing for me was it was good to see Texas win in a dominant fashion with Tyrese Hunter and Dylan Mitchell having absolute stinkers.
And no Timmy Allen, right? Like this was the big three we haven't necessarily seen all year. Dessou, by the way, just has been unleashed. I think it's a bit of a secret weapon that Terry was holding all year, has been unleashed in the conference tournament, had his first double-double in this tournament, and then went on to be MOP of the tournament, right? Had three straight double-digit point games, was the leading scorer in two out of the three games, I believe, in the Big 12 tournament. I mean, just coming out of nowhere, we knew Marcus Carr would get it going again. He had a couple down games. We knew Serge Ibari-Rice was, you know, phenomenal player who had like one kind of down game, but got it back up to where it needed to be. The Hunter, Mitchell, Allen, right? One of those guys stepping up to join that three is really dangerous. And then, you know, this team has Artario Morris, who, you know, can score, that's all I'll say. They have Brock Cunningham, who can come in and change the dynamic. You know, there's legitimately, you won't go super deep in the NCAA tournament. You just don't have to. Christian Bishop, who had a big game in the tournament. Like, they're legitimately 8-9 deep to give teams different looks. But the having a big man who can score, pop out, shoot, hit his free throws, do all the things Disu is doing right now, really makes this team interesting. If he can stay out of foul trouble and you know, play 25, 30 minutes a night, where he's been playing 18, 22 minutes throughout the season, if he can really extend those minutes, I think it's an extra dimension for teams. And really, the offense aside, I mean, this was a defensive masterclass, the Kansas game, but the entire tournament, right? The wins over Oklahoma State and TCU en route to the title, they gave up just 54 points per game across the three, let teams shoot 35%. And key, Gerald, we'll talk about this in our next section, they only gave up 26% from the three-point line. Now, you could say, hey, three unlucky teams, the shots weren't falling, but I think there is something there. They also did that at the Kansas the last game of the season, so basically their last four games, they've really run people off the line very well. And again, we'll talk about why that is critically important to the start of March Madness. But for the Big 12 tournament, really great showing. If, you know, they fell in the title game, you could have said, oh, they didn't have Timmy Allen, chalked it up to that and said it was a good performance. But the team showed up, showed out, went all the way through, got their second one in, you know, 3 years, basically. So I like this. I like the new habits of this team of beating Kansas and winning trophies.
And I think playing solid defense, right? I think early in the Rodney Terry era, we were concerned that Rodney Terry's penchant for defense or for offense was going to cost Texas defensively. And we saw that in a couple of spots. And I think seeing them course correct, not just in the Big 12 tournament, but over the last month or so, seeing them kind of lock that defense down, because defense travels, right? They're going to Des Moines, Iowa for the tournament. And so defense travels. Offense may not be there all the time, but holding a team, you know, having a team with the firepower that Kansas, having just two players go into double figures, like that's an impressive outing for them, right? Right, but like holding Grady Dick like basically ineffective from the floor, like that's a massive thing. If you can do that to a player of his caliber, there's a lot that you can do in the tournament. Again, because the defense is going to travel with you, and defense really in the NCAA tournament is what gets it done. And so for their trouble, Texas now heads to Des Moines for the Midwest Regional, the number two seed in that bracket. They open up with the number 15 team in the country, Colgate, who solid offensive team, doesn't play a ton of defense, which hopefully sets up a little bit better than the last potentially stumbling block that Texas faced in the NCAA tournament a few years ago.
Yeah, a couple things on that, right? That they were, Abilene Christian was a team that was, you know, a great defensive team that could, you know, be ruthlessly efficient on the offense when they got hot, but really, you know, it was great defense. And, you know, the unsubstantiated but strongly believed rumor that Chris Beard helped his friend do the scouting report to get, you know, Shaka fired so he could take the Texas job. We know some things about Chris Beard. We might even talk about it later. That doesn't seem, you know, below him by any standard. But yeah, nonetheless, this should be a different setup, hopefully, and a different outcome. I think this is a better team, and I think this is a team that's more built to win this first game specifically, you know, absolute minimum, right? Like, we shouldn't even be talking about it, but we have had that stumble. We have had troubles. This has been, like, you know, we don't want to just pretend like the past didn't happen because we had a good regular season, right? You need to prove it in March. You need to prove it in the tournament. They've done so already by winning the conference championship, but the last time they did that is when they stumbled against Abilene Christian. So Colgate is interesting, right? A really good offense, a top 50 offense. The number that jumped out when this was announced quickly to everyone online was they're the only team in the country shooting above 40% from the three-point range. So remember my earlier comment, the Texas in the Big 12 championship and dating back to Kansas, you know, in the four games ago, and really, honestly, through all Big 12, has been phenomenal at running teams off the three-point line, not letting them get hot, right? A dunk or a three-pointer are great momentum starters, and a three-pointer, you know, it does the most for the scoreboard. So if you can really limit people from doing that, I think Texas is just so much more athletic than this Colgate team, which admittedly, look, Colgate was an interesting and fun pick because the Patriot League wasn't great, but they were, and they just had a really, really solid season. It was one of those teams, I love mid-majors, I love March Madness. It was one of those teams I was going to be watching regardless, hoping they would get, you know, the right matchup and pop off on somebody. I don't think, for Texas's sake, that this is the right matchup. Now, again, I'm not saying this is a given or anything, but, you know, Colgate being an efficient shooting team that runs pretty good offense, doesn't have the athletes, you know, to hang with Texas, doesn't play the type of swarming defense that, you know, could give Texas problems, leads me to think that even if Texas has an off shooting night, which is how they've been susceptible, turns the ball over more than typical is how they've been susceptible, a big, which Colgate doesn't necessarily have, that is dominant. Those are the things that have given Texas a little bit of trouble. And so because of that, I do feel like they should have a pretty comfortable start in Des Moines, Iowa.
So it's not necessarily like they're shooting a ton of volume, right? Like they're number 71st in the country and made three-pointers per game. So there's like a line to toe there. Now, this is going to come back and bite me in the keister. They're going to make 15 of them against Texas this weekend. But I think it's all going to come down. Can they run them off the three-point line? Can they force them out of their game plan? And we've seen Rodney Terry's team do that week in and week out. It's been a thing for them in these last few weeks. Like we said, that has been the thing that has been the most impressive for me in this run is that, like, Rodney Terry was not Chris Beard when it comes to how he coaches defense and the emphasis he puts on it. But we saw the offense immediately take a surge forward. And so if we said they could, we said it right after the change happened, if they could even normalize on defense, they don't need to be what Chris Beard's team was doing defensively, because that's not how Rodney Terry coaches. But if they could get better, this could be a really good team. So for Texas now, if they can handle the Colgate Gators, I don't know what their actual mascot is, but Gators feels good.
The toothpaste. Got them on,
the toothpaste?
The Colgate. The Colgate Minty Fresh is actually what they call themselves.
The Colgate Cavities. If they can handle them on Thursday in Des Moines, they will get to play in the round of 32. The winner of Texas A&M and Penn State. A&M fans salty that they were penalized for both their bad non-conference and Buzz being kind of a mouthy, salty jerk. But so they're a little bit underseeded in that one, taking on Penn State. It's more of a penalty to the other teams when a team is underseeded, much less the team itself. Like, you could take it personally, but it honestly means you probably have an easier path to the title than he would otherwise. So Texas potentially gets to play A&M for it to reach its first Sweet 16 in quite a long time.
Since 2008. It's if they win Thursday, they have a Saturday matchup, right? Neither of these teams wants to look past their opening matchup, right? That's the Colgate Raiders, Gerald, the Raiders.
There we go.
In New York, right? No one, I don't know that I knew that before they were announced.
The Gators forever, I don't care.
Yeah, the Colgators actually makes way more sense. But they have to win that game, and then A&M has a more difficult matchup, right? I think A&M should be favored in that one, you know, because they really, I think the Aggies were like in the net at like top 25, right? They should have been a 5 seed. And I'm not out here riding for the Aggies. The moment I saw they were a 7 seed, I said, oh, we're the two. Like, we're the two immediately. It's they're setting up a Saturday ratings matchup between these two teams. I get it. But they didn't give them the easiest path necessarily. Penn State's probably the best 10th seed, in the country. They are a team that had a good run, got hot late, probably deserved themselves to have an easier schedule, right? Like Gerald said it, when you underseed, you hurt the other teams. It gives Penn State, which, you know, are the oldest group text that Gerald and I are a part of are the four people in it. Two of them are Longhorns. One's an Aggie, a good friend of the show, Mario, who's never listened, and Raymond, who is a Penn State fan and may actually listen at some point to this show for sure. So maybe he hears it. We'll be rooting for you, Raymond, to win. But no, the A&M Texas matchup is, I get it why they want that, why it's, you know, it seems so appealing to the committee, and I don't think you could get away with getting Texas anything lower than a two, right? After Texas knocked Kansas out from being the overall number one seed with two blowouts in a week, I think they also played themselves into the fact you absolutely couldn't put them lower than a two. And so how are you going to get that matchup? Either you go it one round further, right, and you draw it up that way, or this is the one where it's you control the most variables, get those ratings, and you set this up.
It's harder to guarantee or to bank on both teams making it to the second weekend, but it's pretty fair to say that Texas will likely make it to the second round, the round of 32, and it's only a three-point line, right? A&M is favored by 3 right now, according to several different sites, if you're into that kind of thing. But so there's a legit chance that Rodney Terry will likely be able to earn himself another year as the Texas head coach with a win over the Texas A&M Aggies to get Texas to the Sweet 16.
The narrative writes itself, and I'll give one key stat here. This is the one thing to watch, right? We know there's been this weird narrative of Texas, you know, doesn't play in the first half and comes alive in the second half, and that has worked, right? When trailing at halftime, they're 7-8. Okay, they've gotten to 500 when trailing at halftime. That's pretty good. When Texas is leading at halftime, when they can start fast, they're 19-0. So Texas, if they can play defense, if they can get ahead in the first half, knowing that they have been a really good second half team all year, so knowing that that is not a given, but that is the likely state of play, an early start in you know, obviously their first game and certainly in their second game is what you're looking for. That's my key indicator for this March Madness run as you're filling out your brackets.
But they got a 4 seed out of it in the Seattle Regional, which thankfully they get to host the first 2 rounds of the Mood. So Texas, if you don't know, is really good on the Moody Center floor. So fans pack it out. But a tough bracket for them. They've got Louisville potentially, or the winner of Louisville and Drake, which Drake is not a bad team either. And then they've got Stanford, Iowa, and South Carolina on their path to a championship. But Texas gets to stay in Austin for this one, for the first couple of games, hopefully, or theoretically.
Yeah, and that's no small feat, right? Like, they were really, really good at home. So getting home games is phenomenal for this team, especially that Louisville team is dangerous. Like, they scare me. Yeah. That's a really good number. That's a really good 5 seed. Certainly the best 5 seed. I think you probably could have thrown them in at a 4 seed and no one would have blinked an eye. So it's going to be a good test. So getting that effectively as a home game will be huge for the Longhorns. Helpful. Like Gerald said, if they do beat Louisville, oh, well, you get the reward of playing Stanford, who Stanford has ended Texas's run in the recent past since Vic has been here. So maybe there's a little bit of redemption story there. Fortunately, that game will be back on the West Coast, closer to Stanford territory. I don't know that Stanford really has fans, so what territory do they have? But in Seattle for that regional, if they do happen to, you know, get the Vic March magic and get that run going and get through number one Stanford, again, you get rewarded by playing by far the toughest 2 seed. I would say one of the probably 3 hardest outs in this tournament, Iowa, with Caitlin Clark, the best player in the country, as, you know, to win your region to go to the Final Four. And then again, I'm just gaming this out. If you get to the Final Four and you say, okay, we've done it, we've made it past the Elite Eight, can we get to a championship game? Then you have to go through the other player who's in contention for the National Player of the Year and the undisputed number one seed, best team in the country, South Carolina. So absolutely brutal draw. The home, you know, court certainly helps to get through to the round of 16. But, you know, it's going to take this team doing all the things we know they can do, which is the key indicator in this one. We've talked about it many, 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 many times. When Texas holds teams under 60 points, they win those games. They are undefeated when they hold the opponent under 60 points. They've won games where they've allowed more than 60, but they've never lost when they've held their opponent under 60. this season. They're the only team, in fact, in the country that has at least 20 games holding an opponent under 60 points. So I think they're 21-0 in those games. So there is a very, very clear path to victory for this team. They have to play some defense, which against Iowa State, they tried. It really was good up until the last minute of the third quarter. And Ashley Jones, who's a great player, scored her age, I think, in points, 28 of them. She's been around forever. She's got to be done. I think she's actually done finally as a super senior. But yeah, if they can do better than they did against Iowa State, they gave up more than 60, lost that game, and play some defense, then I like where they can be. One thing that I loved is they blocked shots in that Big 12 championship game. And you know, Texas has more height, even with, you know, one big down and Aaliyah Moore, right? They have more height than they've had in the past. If they can get some scoring outside of just dumping it into the bigs, but also, you know, get some rebounding with that height, they've been great at blocking shots, but could be, I still think, a step up in the rebounding department. If they can do that against Louisville as well as obviously East Carolina to start, then I think they're in a good position.
So your viewing schedule for this week, check out the men's game on Thursday. Theoretically, if Texas wins, then you'll have the men's second round game on Saturday afternoon. The ladies, their first game will be Saturday night at 10 p.m. on ESPN, so you can check them out. Support the ladies because they are going to make a deep run. I'm calling it right now. As the number next to their name might imply, the number two women's track team finished as the runner-up at the indoor nationals this past weekend because of the efforts of folks like Julian Alfred, who once again broke her own record, running the second fastest 60-meter ever, setting the collegiate record with a 6.94. She actually owns 9 of the fastest 60 meters in school history. She also decided to break the record for the 200-meter. She was also part of of the relay team that finished as a runner-up. Texas did its thing. The ladies in a battle with Arkansas to get this done, and unfortunately came up just a little bit short.
Yeah, it was actually a lot of drama, right? After after everything that Julian Alfred did, it came down to the final 4x400 race, and Texas went out and performed fantastically. They set a new school record for the fastest time ever run by a Texas 4x4 team, but they took second place to an Arkansas team that set a new collegiate record in that one. So, I mean, to Arkansas's credit, they earned it. They won a national championship. Texas didn't lose it. They won it, right? The other event that probably determined this was the 400-meter that Rasadat Adeleke finished runner-up in, right? She fell to a record-breaking performance from Britton Wilson, right? Like, you had a runner who held the collegiate all-time record in Adeleke, and someone went out and beat it. So in two events, Arkansas went above and beyond, right? Texas was phenomenal. There were great performances all around. Akilah Smith, you know, I think when Tara Davis left, it's like, well, what do the jumpers have? Coach Flo's always got jumpers. First Longhorn to ever finish top three in both the jumping events, number two in the long and number three in the triple jumps. Christine Blazevica, friend of the pod, finished fifth in the pentathlon. And I just want to go back because I don't – Gerald spelled it all out. But I want to make sure our listeners listen as we say it again. Julian Alfred just passed Logan Eggleston, and I hate to say that, as the best Longhorn on campus this year. And that's tough because Eggleston, such a legendary run to that championship. But – Julian Alfred is not just the best like college runner. She's the best track athlete in the world right now. Like, she is that. She's setting records. She is running times that no human has beat, right? She is the fastest woman on the planet. Like, she absolutely, I think, will win the Bowerman. Because after the 60, which we knew was her race, and she, like Gerald said, is in the 9 fastest times, she just went and set the fastest ever college record. And only one person 30 years ago, a Jamaican sprinter, Marlene Audi, who was called Queen of the Track, who has herself, like, you know, 30 different records in the 90s, is the only person who's ever broken 22 seconds ever in the history of track and field. The only woman who's ever broken 22 seconds. And Julian Alfred ran a 22.01. Like, she's doing stuff that nary has ever been done in recorded human history. So put some respect on Julian Alfred's name. I'm glad we have outdoor track so we can continue to watch her dominance, because she really is, like, putting herself on that all-time Rushmore.
And I mean, you really need to make sure you're paying attention, because I don't know if you're aware, but the Summer Olympics are next summer, so it's quite likely that this is her potential last go-around for the Longhorns, both indoor and outdoor, because she is going to represent St. Lucia in the outdoor Olympics. I would put any sort of money on her being one of the podium athletes for several events for St. Lucia. This is the last year, likely, of her in burnt orange. On the men's side, the men finished sixth. It was not the season we thought that the men would have, but still a solid outing from them heading into the outdoor season.
Yeah, absolutely. A little, you know, I'm not going to complain about a top 10 finish, right? Leo Nuge also had a third in the heptathlon, broke Trey Hardy's record. We love the Nuge on this podcast.
We love Trey Hardy on this podcast too.
We do. That is true. Yeah, it sounded like just absolute shots fired at Trey. No, but they scored, I think, with some jumps as well. It was good. They just, you know, even though they had more representatives technically than the women who made it to nationals, they weren't able to score in as many events. So, you know, it's I'm not going to say that number six finishing sixth is a bad year. We kind of knew this year that they were an outside shot to be a top three team after a couple indoor races. We'll see what they're able to pull together in the outdoor with some of the field events being added in and some other races that aren't in indoors. So I think it's still a chance that this is a good season, but when you're the reigning national championship and you lose it, that is tough. But look, I'm not going to sit here and criticize a top six Director's Cup point finish for a really good track team. And again, I don't know that we thought we would just own the 800. So kudos to bringing in a new coach for the distance to middle distance and him putting immediately his stamp on the 800 by getting a 1-2 podium finish in that one.
Yeah, don't hear me saying that this was a bad season overall, but you know, when it comes to Texas track, there's an expectation that we have, and I think we're a bit spoiled. But up next for the track team, they'll start their outdoor season. They don't get much time off this weekend, traveling to Tampa for the USF Invitational on Friday and Saturday. That brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. We talked about it last week. The baseball team needs to crack off a significant run ahead of conference play to really set themselves up to not fall flat on their faces. But they got that started with an undefeated week. They beat Mercer and then swept Manhattan 11-3 over Mercer on Wednesday, 8-1 on Friday over Manhattan, 10-4 on Saturday, 16-6. That one was a little bit more spicy than we thought it would be, but still a solid week overall, especially from the pitching staff.
Yeah, absolutely. Lucas Gordon looked phenomenal. Six innings, no hitter. Saturday, Zane Morehouse gave up five hits, two earned runs, got a no decision, but Max Grubbs came in. Travis Staley, like, he got a win, and I'm glad he got off the schneid. Five innings, five earned. Glad the bats could come, right? We said that, as you know, the arms had started off first and the bats just were lagging behind. This was a weekend where, you know, we're technically a week, right? Because we talked about Sam Houston while we recorded last week, so it was five of them. Yeah, really, this week. But let's call it, since we last recorded, they basically, you know, scored double digits in three out of four and eight in the other one, right? So that's a really good response for the bats. I like to see that. A guy who I believe going to take full credit. Actually, I'm going to take full credit for everything because in the last podcast I said watch out for Peyton Powell starting to put the ball in the park. Well, Powell is now on an 8-game hit streak, hitting .518 in the month of March with 11 RBIs. He did it across multiple of these games, got a home run, had an RBI double. He's just seeing the ball really well. We've seen him in really, really limited at-bats. He's been here 3 years now, technically redshirted as a freshman, and then had a redshirt freshman, and then a, you know, obviously redshirt sophomore year. So he's been on campus for a little while, but he's always been kind of a pinch hitter. He's come in, I think he had a pinch hit, maybe even a pinch hit RBI in a College World Series game. So he's not afraid of the lights. It's just a chance to get the opportunity. He also made a really great diving defensive play at third base in this one. So I think he has earned himself with the hot bat a chance to get some more at-bats.
Peyton Powell hitting with power for the Horns. Next up for them, they've got a Tuesday, Wednesday two-step against North Dakota State. And then they've got the UNO Privateers, great mascot, for the weekend.
Gerald, sorry, I have to ask, did you see the UNO University of New Orleans Privateers anything that they did this weekend? Anything pop up on your radar?
I don't believe so. I'm excited to find out.
Okay, so there was, I think it was a Friday or a Saturday game against Mississippi Valley State where they were up.
Oh, this was the ump thing.
Yeah, they were up like 7-3. And so the clip that went viral was the third strike with two outs in the bottom of the last inning. In that entire at-bat, if you watch the whole thing, the first strike was also horrendous. He got that dude twice with just some absolute BS calls. That umpire has since been suspended. But they, on the third strike that went viral, it was a, you know, Uno pitcher threw one in the other batter's box, and the umpire clearly had dinner reservations that he wasn't getting out of. And New Orleans, it's a great city to eat in. I get it.
There's a po' boy waiting on him.
And he calls it, the batter rightfully, you know, goes ballistic. The catcher did a good job calming him down, saying, that wasn't a strike. You're not crazy. Like, classy move. But then I think maybe with all the attention on the game, New Orleans came out the next game and dropped 30 runs on them.
35 to be
30,
exact.
35 in 6 innings, right? They called it 7. They called it in 7. They didn't bat in the bottom of the 7th. So in 6 rounds of at bats, they scored 35 runs. So
I just looked this up. You know what they did on Sunday? They run ruled them again 16-3.
Look, I'm not saying that New Orleans is the best baseball team in the country, but they are the most interesting right now between that play going viral and then scoring 35 runs, which, you know, is close to a record. It gets close to what was the, like, Georgia Tech over someone scored 200 points in football back in the 1900s. You just don't see 35 runs in baseball. I think Auburn or Clemson, someone did that a couple years ago, got in the 30s. It's just like after 24, it's hard to keep, like, kicking a corpse, like, you know what I mean? It's a lot of runs.
Eventually you're just hitting a dead body. 51 runs in 2 games for the Privateers. They're probably going to come back to earth a little bit. They've got LSU in their midweek, and then they're coming to Austin. Softball unfortunately saw their win streak snapped, but did some good work ahead of that. They actually took care of Wisconsin and Alabama in a doubleheader on Friday, 5-1 over the Badgers and 5-3 over the Crimson Tide on Friday. Took care of Wisconsin again 7-4 on Saturday, and then went to extras on both Sunday games of the doubleheader. A 4-3 loss to the Crimson Tide in 11, and then a 5-4 loss to the Texas State Bobcats in 9.
I love the freshmen on this team. I really, really do. I think, you know, you see those big numbers next to people's names, and the 3 lowest, I guess, number recruits on this are showing out. Sitlali Gutierrez continues to be really, really good. Had a, you know, a great outing against Wisconsin in the first one. Leanne Good and Viviana Martinez are like both top 5 in the country in hits right now as true freshmen infielders who can play around, you know, with Mia Scott, who's also been doing great as a sophomore. She's old news, but this is a young team, right? And so a young team, you see some really good ups and a little bit of unevenness. But look, they had an 11 game, you know, win streak until they lost that, what was it, 3rd game of this tournament. So I want to point out, when they played number 9 Alabama the first time, Mack Morgan came in and looked great, and she outpitched in Texas, outplayed a really good Alabama team, but they beat Montana Fouts. Like, Montana Fouts has an 80% career winning percentage. She's like 81-20 in her career. She's the 2021 National Pitcher of the Year, 3-time All-American. She just last week threw a perfect game, I think the 2nd of her career. The famous one, obviously, she threw in the College World Series against UCLA. But, like, she's 98% of Kat Osterman good. Like, she's phenomenal. And Texas got a win against her, so that's a big deal. The second game, she pitched again, and you know, that's the one that they lost in 11 innings. So they really are playing the best teams really well this year. Falling in extra innings in their 2 losses is tough, but it's character building when I talk about being young, you know, across the board, both pitching and all over the field. You learn from this stuff. It's good to get it in early. And I, you know, I'm not upset with a couple losses here in extra innings when it was, you know, it's stretching them and it's growing them, and it's stuff they'll store away for the postseason.
Yeah. And even in that Sunday loss, like, Texas could have folded in that early loss to Alabama. They were down 3-0 in the 2nd inning and they came back and sent it to extras, right? They scored 3 in the 3rd and the 4th, and then the game goes 11 innings, right? That's a team that's battling. And this is not a team that we really, you know, we talk about the baseball team losing a lot. The softball team lost like Janae Jefferson, which is, I don't want to say softball goat, but she's in the conversation. Texas still has the cat, right? So like, it's hard to call anybody the goat and Cat Osterman, but like Janae Jefferson is like a 1A. I wouldn't get mad at you if you argued her. So like the softball team lost a bunch as well. So this is not a team that we were expecting to be battling. And especially with the way that the season started for them, they're really starting to show some of that growth and maturity that they're going to need to compete. And I think Coach White is getting them right. And I think that obviously the win over Alabama, but even battling back from that loss, like that's one that you could absolutely fold. And they went and touched one of one of the best pitchers in the world right now and forced extras.
Yeah, that's Olympian Montana Fouts as well, representing the U.S. team in the last Olympics with Cat Osterman, which is a crazy span of life. But I think we said it on the last pod, Cat welcomed in another daughter. Congrats to her. But if Cat is the goat, if she's the cat, then I'm going to go as far as to say Janae was the bat because she's the greatest player for Texas. But Leanne Good coming in doing her best Janae impression as a true freshman in that Texas State game, which again, they lost in 9 in the 7th inning. She had a 13 pitch at bat, fouling off 6 straight until she put a ball in play to keep the rally going and to ultimately be the tying run to get them to extras. So this is a team that, like we said, is fighting, and it's the young players fighting, right? It's, you know, they have some seniority on this team for sure. But it is a lot of young players who, you know, every one of these at bats, every one of these hits, every one of these wins, every one of these battles is adding to their growth as, you know, this year and the years to come.
Next up for the ladies, they're also heading to Tampa. Maybe they'll share some flights with
spring break, baby.
Spring break, right? Spring break in Tampa, not bad. But going, they've got Sam Houston State on Tuesday, and then going to the South Florida Showdown against Marist, USF, Lehigh, and Iowa. Number 2 men's tennis, Downs, number 25, Stanford on the road, 5-2, scored the doubles point in 4 singles matches for their 9th top 25 win of the year.
Number 1, Elliot Spazieri continues to look like the best college tennis player in the country. Added another top 10, top 15 victory on the season. He's got a few top 10s as well over number 13 Arthur Ferry from Stanford. Number 18, Oldieb got both the singles and doubles win. Cleve got a singles. Nevin Aramilli also picked up a singles win. But Spazieri is the type of player that makes Texas a danger to win the whole dang thing.
Absolutely. He's definitely got a shot at a solo championship, and he'll obviously try to carry his team to the team championship as well. They've got NC State on Tuesday, and then again USF on Saturday, and then they'll start conference play. We'll record before then, but they've got number 1 TCU looming next weekend. On the ladies side, number 12 women's tennis, they opened Big 12 play with a 1-1 week. They actually beat OU pretty handily, 5-2, but then fell to Oklahoma State in kind of a late rally from the Cowgirls. Tough drop for them, but overall promising start to conference play.
Yeah, see if they can kind of equal that out. I think they've won Big 12 like 5 years in a row. I don't want to see that end. So let's get it figured out here with you have the state of Oklahoma. Now you move to a state that I think is a little bit easier on the tennis court, and they could put together back-to-back wins here.
They've got the Sunflower State two-step, Kansas State on Friday, Kansas on Sunday, both in the road. They'll be back in Austin soon. On the swimming side, the men qualified 18 for the NCAA championship, 15 swimmers and 3 divers. The ladies, number 2 in the country, qualified 19 for the championships, 14 swimmers and 5 divers. For context, Texas is right up there with the top teams with NC State and Cal. As far as qualifiers on the ladies' side, they're up there again with Ohio State, Stanford, and UF with right around the same number of swimmers, 16 swimmers, 15 and 13 for NC State. Number 1 rowing opened the season with a scrimmage against SMU in Dallas. They'll be off until April for the San Diego Crew Classic on April Fool's Day. And then number 6 women's golf opens up their season and the Cactus Cup against Arizona State and San Jose State. They had a 4-0-2 win over South Carolina and a 4-2-0 win over San Jose State.
Yeah, this one just wrapped as we're recording this on Monday night. I think it was in Arizona, so it wrapped at about 9 p.m. our time. They will play tomorrow against Arizona State, but Sophie Guo won both of hers. Also wins from Hugh Hio, Odwin, and Park across the two. So really strong start. Basically, out of the three, whoever has the most points will win the Cactus Cup, which is the thing you always want to win. So they're in a strong start with day one. They'll play just one match against Arizona State on Tuesday. Jared, let's take a little look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. And we got to start where everyone knows we'll start after, I guess, booing them out of the park at Pro Day in the bubble. One, Daniel Trejo, a machete, a man who came, impacted us, gave us the memes, gave us, you know, the cheers, actual legitimately great highlights. I still remember that Bama game, like, this kid, are we? And he just did his thing. Seems to have marked his 1 year Longhorn legend. You know, Mike Antico's done it. Danny Trejo, the 1 year Longhorns, Calvin Anderson, there've been a few. Will declare officially for the NFL. So best of luck to Danny Trejo. You came in when we needed you. I think Texas is transitioning likely to kind of the next era with the Stanford transfer punter, but Trejo officially declared.
If you're going to break physics and punt the ball through the roof of the bubble, you absolutely should go pro. So good decision from him.
Fair enough. Gerald, this one was interesting. We knew it was coming, but it is finally here. My social media was a little weird to see some of the volleyball players playing volleyball again, but they were outside in Hawaii, which, again, may be the best reason to play beach volleyball as a sport. Like, the places you travel to for tournaments are California and Hawaii. So golf or volleyball is really where you want to get your scholarships, but, or beach volleyball specifically. But beach volleyball kicking off their inaugural matches. 2024 will be their first fully sanctioned year, but they're going out and playing some great teams. And again, doing it in Hawaii, which is a great way to do it. A lot of familiar faces from the national championship volleyball team. Some new faces between transfers who had made it in, and this is their first time playing for Texas. But most, I think all, I believe, of the people representing this team also are playing on the Gregory Gym hardwood.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got a few years before this thing becomes official, so like they'll get up to it. Hawaii, Oregon, they're really good teams. Nebraska's really good. This is the first time out, right? Your first time out is never the greatest, and we'll see how good they can get.
Cal and Washington also, a lot of top 10 teams. They're staying in Hawaii to play one more this week against number 9 Hawaii. So again, it's just like, why not stay in Hawaii for all the spring break, right? Could be worse, I guess, than going to play beach volleyball in Hawaii and get your school paid for it. So not quite as glamorous as Hawaii, but Scotty Scheffler went ahead and won the Players Championship in Palm Valley, Florida this weekend. Scotty is a phenom, and I'll just leave it at that. I'm going to talk a little bit. I'll tip my hand here a little bit more about Scotty and exactly what he's done as he started his career in my Bang the Drum. But I just don't feel like Scotty's getting enough love as a Longhorn legend, because he truly is, and he's writing his own legend. Another Longhorn who will start to write his legend, freshman Christian Moss, was named to the Fred Haskins Award Spring Watch List, the first one of the spring. 15 people named to this, to the award goes to the nation's top golfer. He's one of only two freshmen. So impressive. Texas keeps the pipeline churning in the Gulf. Vic Schaefer, we mentioned that he's won Big 12 Coach of the Year. He also was named a semifinalist for the Naismith Women's College Coach of the Year. And then two other awards, one of them directly Texas. Chris Plonsky honored as the 2023 WBCA Administrator of the Year. And then Danny Davis from the Austin American Statesman, covering a lot of Texas, was also named by the WCA 2023 one of the Writers of the Year. So big ups to Danny Davis, who might be my favorite person over at the Statesman currently, and Chris Plonsky, who's been doing this thing for a long time. All right, Gerald, let's take it home with our last two segments here, starting with Godzillatron. What are you watching on your giant screen?
Not watching a ton right now. We road tripped it down to the ancestral Goodrich home in Shirts, Texas. And so I finished off Hero of Ages. If you're a fantasy book person, read that series. You probably already have because I'm just late to the show. But like it capped it off really well. The third book, like I said a while ago, I think when I started reading it like a month and a half or 2 months ago, took a while, but I grabbed the audiobook for the drive. And it was great. I love the way it ended. It wasn't really a twist, but it was unexpected. And I really appreciated that. It worked really well. It checked out. And then if you're not up, The Last of Us finale was this last weekend. If you're not watching The Last of Us, it's a great show. HBO continues to dominate the everybody doesn't want to go to work tomorrow, so let's stay up late and watch TV market. In The Last of Us, the season finale, they finished it up in the same way that they finished the first game. And so it's one of the most interesting video game discussions or kind of morality discussions to come out of video games. Happening in the TV world too, and it's really interesting to see that. I love those types of narratives. I love having those discussions about those types of things. If you know what I'm talking about, you do it. If you don't, you don't, which is why I said it like that, because I don't want to ruin anything for anybody. But Last of Us finale is great. The whole season was great. Pedro Pascal was incredible. Lady Mormont absolutely killed it, did a great job, and excited to see how people react to season two, because I guarantee you they're going to be mad.
Okay. I like people getting mad. One of my favorite parts of people consuming television. This might be a show that makes people mad. I don't know. Shouldn't. It's amazing. What I watched, I started season two finally of the sneak hit from, I think, 2020 when it actually came out during pandemic, summer 2020, P-Valley. This is definitely a make sure your kids are asleep show. You can imagine what the P stands for in the original screenplay or play, I should say. But it's about a strip club set in Chuckalisa, Mississippi. I can't remember if I talked about P-Valley originally, if we even had this segment back then. But I watched the first one in 2020. The second one came out in 2022, but I didn't watch it last year, last summer, just starting to get around. I only watched the first episode of season two, but it looks like it's captured a lot of the same things that made the first season pretty great and truly unique in a spectacle and something that was there was nothing else like it. Right, it's probably not for everyone. It's all black cast in the deep South in a strip club. Like, I get why there's some people who aren't interested in the story that is told there. There's, they play with vice and they play with lust and greed, and it is a bit of a melodrama. But it's equal parts Southern Gothic, and it tells like a, Faulkner-esque, like slightly that little Southern mystical story that just captures the hearts for hundreds of years in a way that I really love. I haven't seen anything quite like this. There's a couple characters who just you've never seen anything like in novel or television depiction. Uncle Clifford, namely. But it's really interesting. It's obviously like there's a lot of drama. There's equal parts to Southern Gothic. It's also a soap opera. So if it's not, if that's going to turn you off when it's like, oh, that's ridiculous, then it's not for you. But if you can suspend that and just enjoy an interesting cast, a really interesting setting, some laughs, some shocks, some like just unique story told in, a place that's probably a ripe with stories, but not particularly mined, right, in the American discourse. The Southern Mississippi Strip Club, I don't know. P-Valley's good. It's fun. It's interesting. You'll laugh, you'll gasp. It's a ride.
And that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I was originally going to bang the drum on soup, that being the Cans for Soup program that PTS has put in place, which, again, I jokingly tweeted that we should we should create an NIL collective just to raise soup money for the players so they don't get their parking tickets. We know that the greatest defense against the Texas offense and entire team last season was the parking and transportation services. They shut Quinn Ewers down. They shut many of the players down, as they have for decades, a greater rival than A&M or OU. But they have a one-time trade a can of soup, get out of a parking ticket as a surprisingly well-intentioned fundraiser for Austin Food Bank. So I will give PTS, who also got me a couple times and can be the bane of my existence, a little bit of credit on this one. It's a crafty and clever promotion that is running, I think, through the next week. So if you're a student listening to this, get your soup in so you can get out of a ticket. But what I will talk about, a man who is good, if you recall the Campbell's commercials of your youth, Scottie Scheffler is amazing. Like, we all loved Jordan Spieth when he rose, and I feel like Spieth became the successor to Tiger, and so he really truly got all the media, all the every praise and plaudit, and the, you know, ESPN coverage. Scottie Scheffler is starting hotter than Spieth could have dreamed. Scottie Scheffler is starting his career faster and more furious than almost anyone in the past four decades. Only three players in the last 40 years have had less than 400 days between their first PGA Tour win and their sixth. So Scotty this weekend, as I mentioned, won at the Players. It looked a little dicey on the back nine, and then he just started holding shots in and pulling away because he's that good at golf. One of which where a ball, he's in a bunker and the ball's, you know, a foot above his feet and he chips that in. If you play golf, that's a wizardry shot. But Scotty has been 392 days since his win at the Waste Management Phoenix Open last year, which he won again for his fifth, and then this is his sixth PGA Tour win. David Duval did it in 322. If you remember, Duval started off really hot and had a great career. The only other player to do it faster is Tiger in 273, which is ludicrous and nearly impossible. But what a list, right? When you and Tiger are two of the three guys who've ever done something, it's pretty special. And I think it's about time we start really recognizing that Kevin Durant is still at the apex of his powers in the professional level, you know, needs to stay healthy and do something with the Suns here in the, you know, remaining few years he has. But very quickly, Scottie Scheffler is going to be the professional level most dominant Longhorn. So we got to give Scottie his flowers. He's a man who's absolutely on top of his craft, dominating right now. And honestly, I don't see a challenger. Rom looks like he could give him, you know, some trouble. They could have some good Tiger and Phil battles. But in that matchup, Scottie is the Tiger to John Rom being the Phil Mickelson. So enjoy it. You have the world's number one golfer, a Longhorn, and he doesn't look to be going anywhere anytime soon.
Again, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I really appreciate players who let Texas lean into the rich school country club atmosphere. So I'm banging the drum this week on college coaches and their bad behavior. And this is highlighted by two events this week. One, Chris Beard was hired by Ole Miss in an announcement that literally glossed over the entirety of his Texas career in the same week where his successor, Mark Adams at Texas Tech, air quotes, resigned after a pattern of behavior that proved that he was likely unfit to lead young men, culminating in him using a clobber verse from the Bible that was used to justify slavery in the United States for years, but that's neither here nor there. Part of the conversation, or the conversation I really want to have, is just like, when we think about how coaches should be, I am not saying that coaches need to be soft. I'm not saying that we all need to, all the things that everybody accuses the next generation of being, right? We don't need to be soft. We don't need to be, that all that people have been saying is wrong with the next generation since generations have existed. What I am saying is, there is a way to coach tough and to have authority over your players and to demand the respect that you deserve without it being abusive and without it being unearned. Because you know what? There's an example of that right on the University of Texas campus, and that's Vic Schaefer. Right. When you talk about someone who's led with their faith, that's led with their principles, that's led in a way that honestly is very hard. It's very tough. He has publicly called out players from the podium post game when they do not get it done. And we talk so much about the coaches that are doing it wrong. We spent a lot of ink talking about Chris Beard and running players off. And we talk a lot about Mark Adams saying it's okay to spit on a player because he's their coach, right? But we don't talk about how Vic Schaefer has held his players accountable publicly and privately. And guess what? Nobody walked off the court mid-game. That hasn't happened to him yet, right? That's not the world he's in. Yes, he's had some transfers, and Vic Schaefer's not for everybody. But with the way that the team reacted and when he was announced as coach of the year, you can tell that he does it in a way that is not unearned authority. That is not you do what I say because my position. He has earned their respect. He has earned their love, and he has earned the right to be tough on them, because you cannot lead somebody who you do not love. And it is very clear that the love that Vic Schaefer has for his teams is reciprocated. And so as we think about what coaches should be, Vic Schaefer is a great example. And so I wanted to take this time to use the negative examples to highlight the incredible positive example we have on the University of Texas campus. And that's Vic Schaefer doing it right. A person who's led by his faith and his principles, is a tough, hard-nosed coach, but his team loves him for it. And the results on the court prove that it's a winning formula.
And next year, Vic will take that mentality back to the SEC, where it just means more. I mean, this is the SEC where Hugh Freeze just got hired and Chris Beard just got hired, and A&M employs both Bobby Petrino and DJ Durkin, right? Like, it just means more, and basically winning is the what's implied with the it's, right? And kind of it is all that matters, again, implying winning. And some schools will sacrifice any moral high ground or cachet to get there. I love having coaches like Sark to some extent as well, like Vic, like Shaka, who was that, didn't end, you know, at getting the wins at UT, but you see it working out for him at Marquette. I love having those coaches. And again, you highlighted Vic because he probably is the perfect example of also, you know, doing it right, but getting the results as well. So if Texas can just really get an entire staff of those guys, and if you look at current players and former players, they seem to think Rodney Terry might be that guy. We'll see in the coming weeks. But let's have a roster full of those guys, of and women as well, who are tough, who are fair, but ultimately who grow these players with their access to them as young adults and shape them into, you know, post college champions.
And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with an update from all the NCAA tournament happenings and all of that fun stuff. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time. Hook 'em.
Pick Texas to win it all in your brackets, you cowards.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.